Wow, Lisa, that was so awesome. Because I asked Lisa to do the reading at the last minute and she's pronouncing all these big words. I think she's been around the church a little while. It's good to be here, and I invite you to pray with me as we prepare. This message or this speech or talk is one of Howard Thurman's again. And so I found four really interesting messages that he preached about the Declaration of Independence. And since we're in that month where we recognize America's independence, I thought it would be interesting to share some of the insights. I mean, some of his stuff is just so packed with information, and you can take like the first section of it and spend the whole week just packing it. So it's gonna sound like a lot of information, but just grab what you can and maybe make mental notes as we go along. So for the next 4 weeks, we're gonna look at the Declaration of Independence. This one is called Created Equal. The equality is the first one. We hold these truths that all men are created. We would say today, all people are created. So I invite you to pray with me. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our. And I would just like to read the fourth verse of the first chapter of Micah that Lisa just read for us, because it has a particular phrase in there that is really interesting. But they shall sit every man under his vine tree and his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the Lord of hosts has spoken. And I'll let you know when I'm interjecting my words, and these are Howard Thurman's words. And here begins this speech by Howard Thurman. George Washington was invited with a small community of Jewish people who wanted him to know how they really were committed to where his ideals were coming from, for which the Americans were being rooted on or established on. So these group of Jewish people invited him to their church in Rhode Island. And in response to their invitation, George Washington wrote this letter. And he said to them, he hoped that the time would never come when it would not be possible for every man to worship under his own vine and a fig tree, and no man would be afraid. And the reason I pointed that out is because that's exactly the verse that Lisa just read and I read again in your hearing. I was really curious what else George Washington said to this Hebrew congregation in this limited quote that Howard Thurman points out in his message. And so I found the full quote, and it's both disturbing and fascinating in the National Archives Founders Online. And here it is. The citizens of the United States of America have a right to applaud themselves for giving mankind examples of an enlarged and liberal policy worthy of imitation. All possesses a like liberty of conscience and immunity of citizenship. That is to say, no state shall make or enforce any laws which shall abridge the privilege or immunities of citizens of the United States. Nor shall any state deprive any persons of life, liberty, or property without due process of the law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the protection under the law. It is now no more that toleration is spoken of as if it was by indulgence of one class of people that another enjoyed the exercise or excesses of their inherited natural rights. For happily, the government of the United States, which gives to bigotry no sanction, no bigotry is allowed in the United States, to the persecution, no assistance, requires only that They live under the protection of the American laws as good citizens in giving on all occasions their effectual support to the country. That's the full quote. It would be inconsistent, he goes on to say, with the frankness of my character, not to avow that I am pleased. This is George Washington speaking to the congregation in Rhode Island. I am pleased with your favorable opinion of my administration and fervent wishes for my felicity. May the children of Abraham who dwell in our country continue to merit and enjoy the goodwill of the inhabitations, while everyone shall sit in safely under his own vine and fig tree, and there shall be no one to make him afraid. May the fathers of the mercy scatter light and not darkness in our paths, and make us all our several vocations useful here, and in his own due time, may his everlasting happiness be ours. It's really an excellent and idealistic speech as I read it, and especially given the fact that at the time that President George Washington wrote this speech in 1790, George Washington was still an enslaver. In fact, George Washington was an enslaver for 56 years of his life. 1790. And it was not until 1799, when I was typing out my notes, I put 1999. I said, oh my God. It was not until 1799 that George Washington decided to free all of the people that he had enslaved and that he had owned. So at the writing of that letter to the congregation in Rhode Island, talking about the freedoms that Americans have and the way in which America is now a model to other countries, he was still a slave owner. Okay, that's enough of my commentary. Now to Dr. Thurman's lecture. We hold these truths to be self-evident, and that all are created equal. That's as far as we will go. That doesn't mean I'm going to sit down right now. These are actually his words when he's speaking. I'm not sitting down. I don't mean that all men are created equal. We want to deal with the question of equality by Howard Thurman. Every human being starts off with a kind of blank slate, is what he says, written as they grow older. All of the impressions and all of the experiences of life are written on that slate. Thomas Jefferson, who is credited for creating or drafting the Declaration of Independence, appeals to this human general experience with nature, the world, with each other. And he says, we hold these truths to be self-evident. This, according to Thomas Jefferson, is really a general assumption that all humans are equal in relationship to the world, equal in our making and our connections to each other, equal on the same plane. And Jefferson isn't content when he writes this out, according to Howard Thurman, to rest his case on the fact that these truths are self-evident, but he has to appeal. He makes really an appeal to something more than that. It's more than just the mind, according to Howard Thurman. And that's, he makes an appeal to dogma. He makes an appeal to the Bible. Jefferson makes an appeal to the historical religion and the culture of his civilization when he makes this statement that all men are created equal. The root of the notion that men are created equal and therefore are equal to be found primarily in this insight that something that the prophets of Israel really talked about. And if you read the Old Testament, there's this whole concept that the equality of human beings is rooted in the Old Testament Bible, especially in the prophets of Israel. It's the profound and really significant insight of the prophets of Israel that really establish this notion that people are created equal. Their contributions through religion or through any other aspect or just it's the icing on the cake. But people are created equal from the beginning, according to the prophets. Now, how do we understand that? It's the question that Thurman raises. How do we understand that? And in drafting the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson, just like George Washington, neglected some of the glaring contradictions, according to Howard Thurman, that many of the colonists who sought freedom from British tyranny themselves bought and sold human beings. So you're fighting for freedom for yourself while you're enslaving other people. By underpinning Americans' young economy with the brutal institution of cattle slavery, these colonists deprived 1/5 of the population of their own inalienable rights while they were fighting for their own freedom from Britain. While working to get this declaration developed and accepted, Jefferson wanted, according to Howard Thurman, he wanted to put in the Declaration of Independence that slavery was something that the colonists were not responsible for, but something that British brought with them. And there is a stormy argument going on, according to Howard Thurman, and the argument resulted in the fact that nowhere in the Declaration of Independence is there any reference made to slavery. No reference to slavery appears in the Declaration of Independence because the political feeling was that we're having a hard enough time to make our case for independence from Britain. And if we drag in this whole question of slavery, then it means that we will never get free, which was a fairly interesting observation. We hold these truths that all men are created equal. Created equal? Do you believe that? This is the question that Howard Thurman asked. Do you believe that? I don't want to hurry through this. This is Thurman talking. I want you to think about it. Just feel it for a minute. Are all people really created equal? Equality as to what is the question that Howard Thurman asks. All men don't have the same talents, don't have the same gifts. Equal as to looks, equal as to faith, not F-A-I-T-H, but F-A-T-E. Let's examine that for a little bit. Let's presume that we're created equal as the faith. Now, of course, it's a commonplace remark that everybody dies. One by one, the duties end. One by one, the lights go out for all of us. But is that the basis for our equality as human beings? Is the question that Howard Thurman wants to pose. Would you rest your case on equality as to fate, F-A-T-E? Or do we mean when we say equality as to fate, equality as to, I don't even know how to say this, and these are his words, as to the structure of events that takes place in our life? Do we all experience the same thing, the same way, at the same junctures of our life? Is that the equality that they're talking about? All men are involved in joy and sorrow. All people are involved in happiness and unhappiness. All people are involved in sickness and and health and gains and losses. Perhaps it's true that I can ever stand without the context of my own joy and become aware of the context of your joy. Is that possible? Is that possible for me to stand outside of my joy and be aware of the joy that you're experiencing in your life? Is that the equality that the Declaration of Independence is talking about? What about that? When I say that suffering kind of unites humanity, I mean, we saw it, and this is me speaking, we saw it in 9/11. It seems like all of America, the United States of America, was at that point in history united. Suffering somehow unites people. Is that where we become equal? Because we all suffered alike. Whether or not we knew someone personally who died in one of those flights or the subsequent falls of the trade centers, we united in a way that has not been seen in my lifetime because of the suffering of the people of New York and the people that were on those flights and the lives that were lost. What do you think about that? Is that what makes us equal, that we can unite around suffering? But most of us listening or viewing via Zoom or those here have been touched in our life either directly or indirectly by someone who has cancer, living with cancer, or has succumbed to cancer. But do we experience that the same way? I mean, when we're detached from it, again, this is me speaking now, we can look at it differently. Well, it's out there. It's not in here. It's only when it becomes personal, it's a loved one, it's a dear friend, it's a spouse, it's a partner, that suffering seems somehow to unite us. What do you think about that? What do you have to say there? Are some people who do not suffer in quite the same way different than you and I? Do you ever say that to yourself? I know you're having a hard time with this, but you don't know anything about my suffering. That's how we usually communicate. Yeah, you're suffering, but it's nothing like what I'm going through. That's how we usually communicate. You see, I may say that and feel that. There's something unique about the kind of hard times that I am having. It's not equal. It's not equal. There's something unique about my hard time that separate me from the hard times that you're having. All men are created equal. And we never want you to talk about my hard times as if they're the same. We never want that. I say, well, that's all right for you to say that, but you don't walk in my shoes. You don't stand where I stand. You don't live where I live. You're not married to the person that I'm married to. Your hard times not the same as my hard times. Is that the equality that they're talking about in the Declaration? You don't sit where I sit. You don't live where I live. You haven't looked at my bank account. Is that the equality? All men are created equal. Side note, that's a common commentary, and this is me speaking, we hear today. You don't know what it's like. Have you heard it? You don't know what it's like being heterosexual in a world where everything is LGBTQ+, ABCD. You don't know what it's like being a white man, when white men are the brunt of all the problems in the world. You don't know what it's like being wealthy. You don't know what it's like being an American. Everybody hates us. Is that what we think about equality? I'm different because you are not experiencing the injustice that I am experiencing in the world today. Equality. Equality. All men are involved in that which is in some way characterizes, is it talking, characterizes kind of this diabolical aspect of us. I mean, all of us are sinners. I mean, at least that's what the Bible says. You may not call yourself that. You may not see yourself that way. And certainly when I look in the mirror, I don't see sinner. I see saint. I see the halo over my head. But all of us are sinners. And David even says in the 139th Psalm, in sin, oh, did my mom conceive me? But the curious thing about this doctrine of equality that is based on the notion of somehow you and I are unfit. So we're on an equal scale because we both came into the world as sinners. So that's what makes us equal. And so then what happens with that, what happens when I get cleaned up? What happens when, in some traditions, they say, I get saved? What happens when I'm baptized and marked with the cross of Christ and sealed with the Holy Spirit forever? What happens then? Are we still equals? Or do you or me, depending on who gets saved first, become better? Oh, now the logic is that if I get saved, then at once I break this thing of equality that binds me to all other people. I'm no longer equal with you when I get saved because I've been elevated. Is that the equality that he's talking about? I mean, when I read his stuff, I'm just saying, okay, I can stop here and spend 30 minutes just unpacking that. Or I can stop here and spend 20 minutes kind of just allowing that to soak into me. I become something else. Lifted out of this class of sinful creatures. The moment I decide that I want to be saved, I want to be baptized, I want to, whatever term you use to describe people who are no longer, according to Paul, in the world. And the salvation, though, according to Scripture, is an act of God. So how does that make me better than someone else when it's a gift of grace that I received that I couldn't earn and I don't deserve? How does that make me better than someone else? When it was just by a divine nod, okay, you. Not you. That's what Calvin talks about. Pre-selection, predestination. Well, you're one, two, one, two, one, two, one, and all the ones come this way. You were pre-selected. Is that what it means? Now I'm better. And it was nothing that I did. It was nothing that I could do that made me a one and you a two. It's confusing, isn't it? I love it because it makes me think about, so what makes someone think that they are better than someone else, especially in the church? church. The faith community. How can we get to that point in our life where even as Christians, we have these stages? I am up here, and I'll tell you how it manifests itself in the church, and this is me talking. I go to a liturgical church. I was baptized by immersion. I speak in tongues. So, you're saved, or you're a Christian, or you're a child of God, but I was baptized by immersion. I speak in tongues. I have the gift of prophecy. I was elected. God nodded. You're one. You're two. And therefore, that kind of doctrine, according to Howard Thurman, can become the basis of cults. We see it throughout history. This doctrine of supremacy that's rooted in a theology that binds all men together in this kind of total depravity. So we start off here because we're sinful, according to David and other parts of the scripture. But there's a way that I can become better than you, and better than you, and better than you, as I receive this free gift of grace from God. It's almost as if God is leaving all these other people, all the twos, behind, and say, you ones, come with me. But there's comfort in the fact of knowing that everybody is down there with you, I guess. There's comfort in the fact that I'm a one. I've been selected. What do you mean by equality there? What do you think equality means? I mean, the service has been moving pretty fast. So, I mean, I'm curious, what do you think equality means? If you want to yell out an answer, I'm curious, what do you think equality means? This is a question he asked in his lecture. What does equality mean? Anyone want to offer a definition? What does equality mean?
Receiving justice and dignity.
Justice.
And dignity.
And dignity. So then I would ask, what is justice? Because I say that because I'm fascinated that in Psalm 51, after David had committed this horrific crime against Bathsheba and the nation of Israel, David prays, have mercy. Because mercy is getting what you don't deserve. Justice seems to be getting what you do deserve.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking, well, you know, it's justice.
Yeah. Hero.
It's receiving the same amount of fortune.
Receiving the same amount of fortune and opportunity. I would open it up to our family that's on Zoom. If you want to text something in the chat, maybe Ron can yell it out to us. But how would you define equality? The same amount of fortune and opportunity. Ah, that sounds like the equal opportunity stuff. What is equality? We mean something very special according to Howard Thurman, and very general and also very universal when we use the term. Have you ever seen the little children playing on a playground? This is the story he gives, and sometimes they're playing, sometimes they're fighting, and one says to another, I'm just as good as you. Have you ever heard that? I've heard it. I've heard kids say that. I'm just as good as you. Not as good looking or as economically secure, not as privileged in this way or that way that you might be, but I'm just as good as you. What is the child talking about? These are Howard Thurman's question. What is a child or what is a person talking about when they say something like, I'm just as good as you? What does he mean? What does she mean? What do they mean? What do you mean when you say that? Are you talking in terms of ethics? Are you talking in terms of morality? I'm just as good as you. Are you talking in terms of another kind of value? It's very curious to me, and I must take this on. I mustn't take this on at all. That's what Howard Thurman says. It's a very curious thing to me that how again and again the human mind tends to seize upon one particular thing as either the solution of all problems or the cause for all problems. Can you give me examples of that in our world today? If we can just fix this one thing, we can just get rid of fill in the blank, it will solve all the problems in the world. Or if we can just start doing this, it solves all the problems in the world. Wasn't that the case in Moby Dick? If I could kill the white whale, I'll end everything that's going wrong in the world. If I can catch the white whale, he will destroy all the evil in the world. If I can catch and destroy this white whale. But we don't all have to go all the way back to Ahab. That's what we're doing right now, isn't it? If I can just, and he uses the word communism, if I can just get rid of communism, but we want to bring it current, what is that thing that we say, if I can just get rid of this, everybody will be operating on an equal plane. If I can just get rid of this nemesis, this problem, this eyesore, if I can just, and if I can just get rid of this, then all the problems in the world would go away. Is that true? Is that true? One evil, one solution. Or if I can just create this, then it would change everything in the world. Is that true in your personal life? Is that true in your family life? Is that true in your business life? Is that true in your finances? Is that true in your health? If I can just get rid of this, then everything else will fall into place. When we begin to think in these terms, then the meaning of equality is personal. One thing we're sure of is that we are never willing to accept someone else's judgment as decisive way of determining our equality. I never want somebody else to tell me how I am equal to them. And he says it was a long sentence, so he repeats it. Let me repeat it. We are never willing to accept another man's judgment for what is to be the basis of equality. We're never willing to accept another man's judgment for what is the basis of equality. And partly because equality for you different for me. Equality for me might be different for you. So then how do we say all people are created equal? And then he closes with this little fable. And it's the fable of a lion and a hunter. They came through the forest and they came to the edge of the forest. And the lion and the hunter were arguing about the king, who was the greatest or something. And the human said, of course, I'm the most remarkable thing on earth. And the lion said, of course, I am the most remarkable thing on earth. And then they came to the edge of the clearing, and there was this statue dedicated to a hunter. And there it was, a dead lion and a man standing with his foot on the hunt, on the lion's neck. And the hunter said, see, I told you, humans are greater than lions. The lion in the fable says, but a human made the statue. So that doesn't say anything. I am greater than you. All people are created equal. In the fable, which one are you? Which one am I?
Are you the
hunter?
Are you
the lion? And what makes one greater than the other? Maybe we will get to a place in our world where the other passage that you read for us, Lisa, will actually become a reality. Where we'll lay down our plowshares and our swords and begin to see each other truly. God, we thank you for this day. And so much of what Howard Thurman says is both relevant and very challenging to unpack. And we'll probably be picking at pieces of it throughout the week as we think about what does it mean to be equal? Why can't I be better than anybody else? I mean, after all,
the way you planned it.
Thank you, dear God, for this time together. Thank you that we are in an environment and a community that we can be open to just kind of unpacking messages like these and allowing them to work through our system and help us to better understand ourselves